Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're joined by a woman who didn't have the easiest start in life. The odds were really stacked against her. You couldn't tell this, though, from how her life ended up and the way she is today. Jackie McCarthy O'Brien, good morning.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for getting through all the traffic. You're a Limerick woman, true and true. Still down there, still?
Yeah, and I'm never going to complain about Limerick traffic again after this morning.
Or the rain.
Or the rain, yeah.
Your memoir is called We Made It, Kid. That's a Limerickism, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Like when you're in Limerick and you're walking down the streets, it's, well, kid, how are you doing? Abide the kid, you know.
Do they still say abide the kid?
Oh, they do. We're very proud of it. It's our little piece, you know, like Cork has theirs and Limerick has kid. Kid.
They have by and you have kid. Is that, yeah, they get that first and then the other way around.
It's that's by the kid. How's it going?
Well, we start at the start because you're born in Birmingham in the 60s, early 60s, to a Limerick woman. She was determined not to let you go, wasn't she?
Ah, yes, definitely. So my mom is no different from anybody else back in the 60s. They immigrated, you know. So mom followed her brothers and sisters off to Birmingham, you know, and I suppose fell pregnant with me. She was determined to keep me because back in them days, you went into halfway home if you were unmarried.
Yes.
So they were trying to put me up for adoption. So she wrote to her dad, who was still in Limerick, say, I'm coming home. My child is of colour. If you're there to meet me, great. If not, I'll get back on the boat and train.
As direct as that.
Yeah. Luckily for me, Granda was there to meet her.
He was there.
Yeah. I was 2 weeks old when I came to Limerick. Walked proudly down the streets of Limerick with his, you know, little grandchild.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, he had the best will in the world, but there was a knock on the door.
Yeah. So, like, within 2 months, knock on the door one day, literally, two Gardaí priest and two nuns, just, we're taking your baby. Back in them day, a child of colour, illegitimate, you weren't going to be allowed to walk around the streets. So they had the powers back then, Section 55, just take your child.
This was a court order.
Court order.
Tiny little baby that you were.
2 months old.
Where did they bring you?
They brought me to Mount St. Vincent in Limerick. Mm-hmm. So that was home for me for the next 5 years. You know,
these are your earliest memories.
My earliest memories kind of start from about 3 on, making rosary beads, your fingers bleeding, you know, scrubbing floors. Everybody in the place was a bed wetter. If you wet the bed, you come down with your sheets, you get no breakfast. You stand with a bowl on your head. And more be tired if that bowl fell, because the legs would be walloped off you, you know. And that was life.
Utter humiliation by the day.
Yeah, I mean, you're just in a dormitory with 6 or 7 children that become your family. And even the nuns are family because you know no different. It's your start. You know, I think it's after that that the trauma starts when you leave a place like that.
Do you remember any kindness?
No, I remember a friend that I had, Lillian Bond, and we used to get into one another's bed. Because even back then, we were resilient and clever. Yeah. One bed would be dry, so one of us would get a breakfast.
Also, just the idea of the kids protecting each other, the instinctive human
nature. It was. We were family, and we looked out for one another. We knew the signs of when the nuns were in a mood, when you were going to get a hiding, you know. And that was it. Everybody had that instinct.
If your early memories are making rosary beads, that must come to your mind every now and again.
No, I think I came to terms with it myself later on. Like, I can still do the motion of treading a bead and just twisting the wire. I can do that as easy as, you know, when you learn to cycle a bicycle.
Yeah.
You'll never forget the motion. It's there. But I suppose as I got older, I just blocked all that side out for a long, long time.
And you were hungry, obviously, there.
Starving. The book even begins with the story of the apple out on the roof. So we could come up the stairs and it was a floor to ceiling window. And we could see this apple for about 2 days. And we'd be going up and down the stairs to the dorm. And we'd look at this, can we just get out? And one day we got the guts up to open the window and climb out. But of course it was only kind of like a perspex So the minute our weight was on a down through it, we went. But thankfully, we landed on the bales of hay. But again, the punishment would have been just for an apple. That's how hungry you were.
Yeah,
you didn't get the apple. You'd go out there for a rotten apple.
Didn't even get it.
Yeah. And everything became around food.
Bath time, you were always last into the water.
Yeah. You'll dirty the water, O'Halloran, they'd say. You know, because my mother's maiden name was O'Halloran. So I was Jacqueline O'Halloran. And you'd stand there for an hour, naked, waiting for your turn to get in. All the children would be batted, so you'd be at the end of the queue. There'd be two bats going, and you'd get into neither until everybody else was batted. Then you could get in the bat.
Because of the colour of your skin.
Yeah, and literally that's what it was.
You're 3, 4, 5 years of age.
Yeah. Wow. But these places were cruel. Like, we were a commodity. The government paid the priests and the nuns. So that's all you were. Hmm.
Your mum,
a moneymaker.
Your mum did come to visit you, but you weren't quite sure who this woman was.
No, because like on Saturdays was visitation days. And I used to hate when she'd come to visit me because the nuns would be on their best behaviour on Saturdays.
I see.
Because there'd be parents around. Now, none of us knew these were parents. For me, this was a woman coming interrupting my playtime. And I found out later that mom was told not to tell me. And all the mothers were told because it would upset the children and they'd get notions about going home or wanting to be with the parents. So we became harder to control.
Don't give them
I suppose.
Hope.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, mom went along with what was told. Don't do it. You're only going to upset her. And of course, every mother is going to do the best they can. So she just didn't tell me.
So when you move from the institution to what would become your family home, is it outside Limerick, Kilkeely, where exactly is it?
Kilkeely, just in the shadows of Thomond Park.
Oh, go away,
so
yes,
I remember right the first day going there and seeing the old Thomond Park from the bedroom window.
Go away.
But that was the trauma was coming. I didn't know who this man was because mom had married by then. Hadn't a clue who he was. My youngest sister was born. She's sitting on his lap and I'm like, who are these people? Why am I going? I thought it was a punishment that I'm being sent to these people. And I suppose mom...
Were you sure you were staying there? Did you think you were going to be...
No, I didn't. I thought it was, again, as a punishment that I'm going there and she'll take me back in an hour or two. Mm-hmm. And as the day grew and grew and grew, and then she started showing me towards this beautiful bedroom. And I can remember the smell of the fresh sheets and no smell of pee. Because the dormitories, that's all they smelled of.
First time in your life.
You know, so it was like, oh my God, I don't want to be here. I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go back to my friends.
Yes.
That was the only life I knew. Mm-hmm. And people always say to me, oh my God, it must have been amazing when you got out. It wasn't. When it's the only place
you didn't know,
that you know.
You weren't returning to something.
You know, you're
that,
with you? Strangers. I was a shy child. And these people were complete strangers to me.
But she would have been telling you, I'm your mother.
No.
Really?
She's still, like back in those days, if you remember, like aunties were actually the mother of the child. Yeah. You never told. We had so many secrets as Irish people. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about things about being illegitimate or who you were. You just got on with stuff. And mom was no different. She didn't bring it up. It took me 2 years to bed into that family. And through my brothers and sisters calling them mom and dad, it just then started. Mom, dad. And, you know, you'd see the smile on her face. And I'm like, yeah, I need to fit in here.
Right.
So if that's what they're calling her, I'll do the same.
You were struggling to bond with her. And meanwhile, you're going to school in Limerick.
Yes.
People, tourists would approach you.
Yeah. When I'd walk down O'Connell Avenue, I remember when I made my communion and I'm in my lovely white dress and I'm going up to visit my auntie. And funnily enough, back to the Mount, mm-hmm. that where the industrial school, to show the nuns my beautiful white dress.
Really?
Mom brought me back.
Presented back to the place.
Back to show. And didn't she do well? And isn't she beautiful? And didn't we give her a great start in life? You know, but all the Americans and everything would be stopping. Oh my God, look at the black child in Ireland. Like, it was like, you know, they just didn't expect
it's the 1970s.
To see a child of colour, you know?
Yeah.
So I was kind of like the exotic child walking around.
You leave school early. At what age were you?
12, 13 when I left school. I had just started secondary school and Dad got TB and had to go off to what they called back then a sanitarium, and he was there for a month or two. So I was the oldest and we had a grocery shop at the time. So
running out of the house?
Me. Yeah.
The shop was in the house?
Yeah.
Mickey O'Brien was your father?
Yeah. My hero, the one and only.
And you really bonded with him?
Yeah, for some reason Dad had the approach of just let her out and play soccer. That's what she's good at. She's an athlete. Leave her alone. Let her fit in. Limerick's sports mad. And he had the wherewithal or the foresight to see that if I played sport, Limerick would embrace me. And he was right, you know.
And you were building a confidence here, weren't you? Because you had a teacher, Rita Spring, was that her name?
Yeah, Rita Spring. So at 12, Rita came into my life. She'd been my last primary school teacher.
Yeah.
And there was an incident where friends started to talk about me, you know, and why was I black and my mother and father were white and where did I come from? I had snuck up on him in the bike shed and I got really upset and I hit out, which wasn't me. I was a very shy child.
Right.
So Rita came and, you know, she set me down and she was saying, like, this is unusual. What's going on? I was like, the people I'm living with are only minding me. My parents are in Africa somewhere, you know, looking for me. And she was, no. And she was the one that explained, your mother is your biological mother. She's married to Mickey O'Brien. He's not your dad, but he loves you. And that was another traumatic moment because I built myself up as a black person with parents in Africa.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I'm only half black. I don't own the dad that I've come to love. My brothers and sisters are only half, you know, so I have this sense of I'm only half of everything. The only one that's mine is my mother. So that's kind of lonely. It's lonely enough being a person of colour in Limerick where you see nobody that looks like you. Now I'm only half of this family as
Your
well.
Your identity was totally
Yes, it just kept getting taken away.
Right.
You know, and that's why the sport became so important to me, because on the field I was a giant. I could put my head up and I didn't have anybody asking about my colour. It was my football ability, putting the ball in the back of the net. And that 90 minutes gave me such a release.
Wow.
It wasn't so much that I loved the game. I loved the space and the time it gave me, you know. And
were you able to talk to your mum after what Rita Spring had explained to you?
I said it to her and I suppose she was happy in a way that I knew.
Yeah.
But she also knew that it would be traumatic for me because the losing my sense of identity again. I was happy in my own little world.
Right.
You know, so.
So we didn't talk about it much?
No, never spoke about it. And when I'd ask about my father, I'd get kind of shut down. It would be said, Mickey O'Brien is your dad. He's been good to both of us. And, you know, don't be pushing that boat out. You don't need to know.
The football then, it happens by chance really, does it?
Really. I used to, you know, go to Shelburne Park to run because running gave me that freedom in my head to think about who I was, what I wanted to do with life. And literally a ball came across my path. I kicked it back and I met a guy called Junior King who started
Great
soccer.
Name.
Yeah.
Junior King was the manager. Yeah.
Yeah. And he started the Limerick soccer over 50 years ago.
Wow.
And I was 11 years of age and I was playing League of Ireland soccer. Most of my teammates were 18, but I was that good.
They were like 6, 7 years older than you and you were 11.
Yeah.
So you were a superstar.
Yeah. And we won the first inaugural League of Ireland. So at 11, I'm probably one of the youngest.
Tell us how you got your boots for playing.
Oh, the girls were working, obviously. And, you know, all I wanted to do was play. I'd be playing them on what we call in Limerick tackies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was runners were tackies. And I remember thinking, oh my God, the tackies are in shreds. What am I going to do? I would have played barefoot if I had to. And my idol, Pele, used to play barefoot.
Right.
So I thought if it's good enough for Pele, I can do it.
He was in lovely dry condition.
Yeah,
compared to Limerick.
Exactly. But, you know, but the girls chipped in.
They paid for
and
your boots.
And they paid for the boots.
This is obviously your family. This is your place of belonging now.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
It was, because as I said, there was no questioning of my identity, my colour, anything. It was just, come on, Jackie, get out there. We need you to get two goals tonight for us. And that was it. And I was a prolific goal scorer. Once that ball was anywhere around the 6 yard ball, it was gone. You weren't getting it back. It was in the back of the net. You know?
And Mickey O'Brien, your father, he was hugely encouraging of this.
Oh, this man was ahead of his time. If, you know, they say if there is a fit, he was my perfect fit and very quickly became my hero, because everything in life with him, if somebody came to the door and said the black child, they got lorded out in the garden. You couldn't mention the word black, you know, in any way.
Yeah.
So there was this sense that no matter who came at me, Dad had my back. And he had some very unconventional ways of telling me to defend myself, putting a nail through the top of a stick and saying, here,
oh,
go out and get him right there in the fart. Don't worry about if anybody gives you a hassle. And I'd be, Dad, you know, what about their mom and dad coming? You know, I'll deal with them. Just go out. And I think one thing that he said to me after an incident was like that. You can either fight all your life because your colour isn't going to change, Jackie, or what you can do is set out and prove them all wrong. Mom was told, get her a cleaning job. Nobody marry her. Nobody'll want her. And, you know, that's what she'll do. But Dad instilled with me that I could be and do whatever I wanted. It was going to take me hard work.
You could play for Ireland even. This, he was Rita giving you these
Dad
big dreams.
Were like,
what an amazing man.
Ireland.
Amazing man.
Like me? I go, no, but that green jersey meant so much to me, because
yeah,
it was my sense of identity as being Irish.
You're navigating all bits of identity as a teenager, and there's another part of your life and you that you're trying to navigate in your teenage years.
Yeah, my sexuality. Yeah, that was amazing. I remember there was two girls on one of the teams that we played against, and as a 12, 13-year-old, I nutmegged one of them and scored a goal. And at halftime, she grabbed me and pulled me and said, I'm going to get you in the second half. And then some other girl came up and nudged me and went, we're out for you. I went in and I taught my teammates and they were laughing and we were going, I take no notice of the two of them. They're gay. You know, I was like, what's gay? And they were like, you know, they're partners. They're in a relationship. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to hell. And I wouldn't play the second half because I was terrified they were going to get me. So when these feelings kind of raised their head for me, that's where I went to. And it was a friend of mine. I never told her, but I found myself wanting to see her more and more.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on? What's this about? Or if she held my hand or caught my hand that when we go to a horror movie or whatever, I'm like, oh, why is my heart kind of skipping a beat?
And you didn't even understand that you have, you had a crush on her.
Yeah, hadn't a clue what it was. But then when my mind went back to the two girls, I was like, oh my God, am I one of those gay people, you know? And unfortunately for me, back in them days, there was nobody to talk to. There was no lifeline. There was no nothing. And
how long before you can tell someone?
How long before I do tell somebody? Oh, God, years and years later.
Later, yeah. Were you able to tell yourself?
Pardon?
Were you able to tell yourself?
Then and there, at that moment when I was younger, the only thing I saw was to take my life and go, because I didn't want that coming on Mum and Dad. It was, oh, my God, I know what it's like to be a black person walking around the town. Imagine my Mum and Dad having to be stared at and whatever because they've got a gay child, or my brothers and sisters. So at the time, that's where my mind went to.
Shame and depression.
Yes. And, you know, when...
Thankfully you survive.
Yes, very much so. And again, Rita Spring was the person that I turned to.
Really?
To say, and she just very simply said, God made you. He knows who you are. And he made you the way you are. So he's not going to turn his back on you. Just be yourself. And that's when she said, look, what are you good at? And I said, the soccer. And she said, go and play for Ireland. And maybe in time, visit that again if you need to.
Because you marry very young, don't you, to a man called Tom?
21. I'd met him when I was 19. And by the time I was 21, we got married. went on to have three beautiful children. But I mean, a week before I got married, I was still going down the hill in Killeely on a skateboard and kicking the football around with the lads on the road. I was very much the tomboy. Yeah. But I fell madly in love with Tom.
You were devastated when the marriage ended.
Yeah, and we tried everything. I went to counselling, and a lot of people say to me, oh, you were wrong to marry a man. You were obviously gay. No, I fell in love with this man. He's still a friend of mine. We're still very much the parents of three beautiful children. And he'll always be a huge part of my life. But the age difference was the thing.
Yeah.
And of course, as Diana said, there was three of us in the marriage. Unfortunately, his mother seemed to be in the middle of us as well. So it was more that broke us up, you know.
That's a one-sided look at it.
Yes. Yeah.
At the same time, you were searching for your father and thinking about that, aren't you? And your aunt is trying to put you off.
Yeah, I take the big bold step of running away from home and off to Birmingham with me. I thought naively, all I had to do was walk down the street in Birmingham and I'd recognise him, you know, because I must look like him.
Yeah.
But you can imagine getting off the train and seeing the bullring and all these people of all ethnicities coming towards me. I actually asked somebody, sorry, is this Africa? Or, you know, I'm a completely naive Irish, you know, person that hasn't even got outside of Limerick City, not to mind go to Birmingham. But yeah, I quickly thought this is a bigger task and went to my auntie who still lived in Birmingham. And again, she just kind of said, look, your mom went to a party and something terrible happened to her. So nobody knows who your dad is or anything.
She was making out that she was attacked and that's your dad. Don't go looking for that man.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally, very, total lies.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, the good old Irish lie, you know, that many of us grew up with. And I grew up with that thinking mom was a rape victim because, again, when I'd ask mom,
nothing.
No, nothing at all. So I thought maybe she's not telling me because this is so painful
my
for
God.
Her. So the lie just grew.
Yeah.
And I stopped asking in the end, you know, and I said, I've got a fantastic dad,
Mickey O'Brien.
And that was it.
Now, when the marriage breaks down to Tom, you're a single parent now to three kids. He's helping out as well. But how do you earn money to keep the homestead?
So I'm working three jobs. I worked in PJ's in Limerick, scrubbing toilets, would you believe? I'd go in at 7 o'clock in the morning for 2 hours and I'd do that. I'd got £30.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I was getting. But it helped me pay for a little car. So
you weren't afraid of working?
That was, I was always a worker, you know, it never fazed me to go to work. I'd go from there to my next job in my Ross, coaching children, you know, and rugby, soccer, whatever. And it was whatever I could do to get the money to go to Dublin.
Yeah.
To run the household, the children. That was it.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable you managed to do that. But then on top of that, you fulfill your dream.
Mm.
And you get the green Gansey.
Yeah, that was something else. That was something else. Just to eventually get on that pitch and sing our Ann of Ian. You know, because most people expected me not to know it, that I didn't learn it in school. They forget a couple of fucklegum, you know. And I loved that. I loved making fun that I had the Irish because I'd go somewhere, a priest would start talking Irish to me, thinking I wouldn't know, you know. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get him now. And answering back, Jacqueline O'Brien is and I'm dumb, you know. And he'd be like, the eyes would be bulging. This one speaks Irish, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
You were obviously bursting with confidence, do you think?
I wouldn't say busting with confidence, you know. It's
had
just
enough.
It like being on the soccer pitch and playing for Ireland, you walk a little bit taller when you wear that jersey and you've got the sense of identity. And for me, my teammates would be standing alongside me singing our Ann of Ian and they'd be like, I'm finally playing for Ireland. And in my head, I was saying, people can't take my Irishness away from me now. Can you see me? I'm Irish. Because my skin colour always went before me, you know.
But so that would not have been understood to people at the time. We're only getting around to that in the last decade or so. It's extraordinary.
And yeah.
You played 13 times.
In the soccer, in the soccer. And same in the rugby.
You would have played more, of course, because you left the national team because of many issues.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't ready to go. I was super fit. I was 32. New manager come in. You always have to prove yourself again. I'm training hard. You have to fit in. Every manager will have their own style of football that they want you to play. So I was coming on as a sub, but building my way through. And then an incident happened. It was a very homophobic atmosphere. It's like, oh, sure, God, like all you need is a man to straighten you out. And
does that come that's from the men towards the any gay women?
Yeah, yeah. And it just wasn't the same. We had had a woman before that, Linda O'Gorman, who would allow me bring my children up to Dublin because she knew I was separated and I wanted to play for Ireland. And Linda's attitude was, children won't be a barrier to play. You should be able to still fulfill your dreams.
But with really this, good idea. Yeah, but the regime changed.
Yeah, with this new manager, I didn't feel comfortable in that.
Couldn't have your children around this atmosphere.
I didn't want them around this atmosphere. Not to mind ask, would it be okay for them to come up, you know? And as I said, there was an incident, you know, where there was an advance made towards me. And literally, that was the end of my career. The next...
You're dropped.
2 weeks, the rest of the girls are heading to Dublin for training. Ring me. Are you coming up to stay? Because we'd stay in one another's houses.
Some people might be familiar with it because it's on Independent and RT Investigation.
Yes, they did.
An excellent documentary.
Yeah.
The Girls in Green.
The Girls in Green, yeah. And it was a very hard watch because none of us knew what was going on. We all thought we were the only one. And to watch the younger people, you know, their dreams and shatters, trying to make the Irish team. And what happened was, it was, I sat the same as everybody else and watched the Girls in Green and I cried. I literally cried. And
imagine, yeah.
I think there's one line in it where it's the field of broken dreams, and it definitely is that. Because for a few minutes I felt like I was back in the Mount, taking that green jersey from me, put me back there.
Did your relationship with the football change after being dropped from the team?
I stopped watching it completely.
Even watching it?
No, I would not go to watch a women's match. I wouldn't watch the men's match. I didn't watch it. I think it's only in the last 2 years I started coming back, when the FAI started inviting me back for the 50th anniversary. I went back.
This was a lovely thing. This was the 50th anniversary of the first Limerick League, of the first All-Ireland League, which you and the Limerick team won.
Yes, yes. With,
and all the women from the team were there.
And it was also the first year of the international team.
Yes.
So it was a double whammy. So going up to the Aviva Stadium and watching, and of course us qualifying for the World Cup,
yeah.
It was like, you know, I always say, not me in particular, but my teammates that were older than me that played the first international, the present team are standing on the shoulders of giants. And it was lovely to be a little part of that. I'm back watching it. It's a pleasure to go and watch it.
After soccer, incredibly, you found rugby.
Yeah.
And you also end up playing for Ireland
in
rugby.
I was super fit, and it was purely, again, by chance. I went out to Old Crescent to coach a team in fitness, and another coach turned up and he saw the height of me and he said, fall in there, you'll be grand. And I'm having a clue of the rules or anything.
Didn't know the rules.
I'm in second row and the next thing I'm being thrown up in the air. Ah, sure, I'll catch this bloody ball. It's, you know, and that's it. And off I went. That was on Thursday. I was signed by the end of the training session, played my first match that Sunday. And I thought, wow, I'm brilliant at that. And as I said, I lived under the shadows of Thomond Park and always wanted
as
to
the
play
child,
there.
Your first memory of that family home is Thomond Park.
Yeah, Thomond Park.
And you put on, do you get to play for Ireland in Thomond Park?
I didn't get to play for Ireland, but I got to play for my beloved Munster. And we are Shannon.
Sorry, that's more important.
Well, in Thomond Park. A Limerick person, playing in Thomond Park is bigger than the Aviva.
The national team, don't get down.
Yeah.
You found rugby, this world was much more caring, much more happier place for you.
Oh, definitely.
Safer.
It was a family environment, you know, and some of my dearest friends would have been steeped in the rugby tradition. The Crosses in Limerick, all the family played rugby. And the mother, Mrs. Cross, used to mind the kids for me. Go off and play your game. dinner was always there for them. And, you know, there was no homophobic atmosphere. There was nothing racist about it. If you were good, you were good. And that was it. And I loved that you came off the team, you shook hands, you sat down, you had dinner with the opposition. So you made so many more friends. I just felt more comfortable in this environment.
There must be so very few people. You're certainly the only woman who played both football and...
No, I wouldn't be the only woman, because my friend Grainne Cross had played soccer with me as well.
Oh, yeah.
But what I am is the first woman of colour to represent Ireland in both sports.
Wow.
So that's kind of, you know, because my heroes that I looked up to was Chris Hughton and, you know, Paul McGrath. Huge fan of Paul McGrath's. So I suppose moving forward, it's great to think in the women's game that I'm the first. So it'd be nice to think.
No, it's extraordinary.
You know.
There are lots of messages for you. I've lost track of time.
Lots
of your story.
That's me, the gift of the gab.
Please tell me the name of the wonderful lady that's currently on the show, because Jackie McCarthy O'Brien is with us. And we have some messages. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after these.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. We have a ton of messages for Jackie McCarthy. O'Brien is with us. They want you to run for president, Jackie. What a beautiful sounding Irish woman, and from a Cork man. We love the Limerick accent. I'm crying here. I was born in 1971. My mother was unmarried, but I was lucky that my mother was able to keep me. With Tuam in the news so much the last few years, I realise how lucky I was. That's from Niall for you. What a wonderful life-affirming tale. Dickensian at the outset almost. I'm English with a Limerick mother. So this story has a real resonance and impact. I'm moved by a thoroughly joyful through major, major challenges. A great listener for that person. And some people are in touch as well. People who you've trained, Jackie.
Oh, wow.
Alice, good morning. If you can put on your headphones there. We have a woman called Alice who's on the phone. Good morning, Alice. Tell us your story.
Good morning. I don't have much of a long story, more that when I was in primary school in Milford National School in Limerick, Jackie used to come and coach us what we called a leprechaun rugby on a Wednesday morning. I just have such fond memories of Jackie. She was always so kind and so encouraging and inclusive of all the kids. We used to say, oh, Jackie's coming this morning for leprechaun rugby. And yeah, just a great memories. I have my very good friend Emma is reading Jackie's book at the moment. I met Emma yesterday, and Emma's auntie Jackie as well. Jackie Tangney is a good friend of Jackie.
Emma.
So we had a link there. So myself and Emma had a great chat yesterday morning, regaling about the days of leprechaun rugby in Milford School.
Oh my God, that's lovely.
I remember it well, and I remember Emma well, because I used to always pick on Emma because she was Jackie Tagney's niece. Not picking her in a bad way, but get her to, you know, do some of the drills for me. When you pick one name, you know, when you're into the school.
That's the encouragement.
So yeah, part. I remember it fondly. The only thing that was bad about there was trying to get out the Dublin Road and the traffic for 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Thanks so much, Alice. Thanks a million. There are loads more messages for you besides. An inspiring woman. She's so sweet and resilient. Amazing woman. How great she is, says Veronica. You've loads of TikTok fans, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And one particular fan on TikTok has become a very, very close fan. Tell us about the love in your life these days.
Well, what can I say? You know, at a time when I'd given up on love and everything else like that, this lady said to me, listen, if you ever write a book, get in contact. And if you're in America, I'll host you and whatever. So we got chatting, and then, you know, there was the worry that TikTok was going to be sold off and the Americans
would
be gone
and
whatever. So we exchanged.
And you're posting lovely things on TikTok and encouraging things like pride and so on, aren't you?
My TikToks are life stories about mom and dad, about breastbones and eye bones, about the LGBTQ+, what it's like to grow up black and Irish. I get lots of messages with people with mixed heritage children trying to navigate, you know, what's going on in Ireland at the moment. So there was lots of stuff like that.
How long is it? Ismay,
yeah.
How long is she in your life now?
She's in my life a little over a year and a bit. And, you know, we met. She came to Ireland. I invited her to Ireland. And the minute she came through the doors at Shannon Airport and I looked at her, I went, she's the one. She's just an amazing, wonderful
head
person.
Over heels.
Yeah, it was like at a time when I wasn't looking for love or just was happy with my own life, my children and my grandchildren.
What's she like?
she's feisty. You know, she's got a way about her that puts me back in my place. It's like having my mom a little bit in my shoulders going, Jackie, really? Is this what you want to do? But no, and I feel the love.
You're going to be busy tomorrow, yourself and Ismay.
We are. We're off for a little matter of tying the knot, jumping the broom, as they say. Yeah, it's like...
Getting married tomorrow.
We're getting married tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Yeah. You're after leaving the secret out now, Oliver, you know, but it is. Yeah. Look, when you know, and I've never been happier. It's a full circle moment. I've come back to Killeely again.
I'm sorry, have I ruined this secret?
Well, ish.
Oh, it's okay. Know, ish, I'll take.
Ish. Some people are very askew, very clever. They pick up on little things on TikTok and,
they
say, are you getting married by any chance? But yeah, full circle moment back in Killeely. And having this wonderful woman by my side, as I say in the book, she calms my heart and soothes my soul. And she just gives me that sense of completion. You know?
I'm so glad the story has such a joyful ending.
Well,
Marie is in touch with us. She says, I'm at home upstairs listening to Jackie on the radio. I can't go downstairs in case I miss a moment. What a wonderful, resilient woman. I'm so sorry for the way she's treated as a baby. Wishing you all the best.
Ah, thank you so much, Marie. It's a happy ending. You know what? Look out for book two. You know, when,
got so much
when
more.
The kid met her match, I think, you know, so.
You can't miss it. We made it, kid. Think of Limerick when you see it. Jackie McCarthy O'Brien, thank you so much.
Thank you.